Asking her to speak with father was careless, but putting her at risk again is not an option now that I am fully aware of the danger. But I do not have to say aloud any of these things. Sonia looks into my eyes and sees clearly the plan that is written there. It isn't me she means to risk. Luisa shakes her head. I don't understand. Sonia pulls her gaze from mine and looks at Luisa. Sittings are not the only way to make contact with the dead. My father is in the other worlds, Luisa. Isn't that right, Sonia? She nods. Somewhere, yes. And now Luisa understands. She shakes her head, her brown eyes wide. No. No, no, no. You will not travel willingly. She jumps to her feet. Didn't you hear what your aunt said just last night? It's dangerous, Leah. For all of us, but most of all for you. No. It is simply out of the question. We cannot risk your discovery by the souls. We'll have to find another way. Sonia sighs, as if feeling compelled to say something she does not really want to say. Only, there might be a way. A way in which Leah could find her father quickly and avoid the souls. If there is a way to find my father and determine the location of the list, any way at all, I will do it. I meet her eyes. Tell me. There are rules to traveling the plane, and one of them is that no soul can occupy more than one of the 7 other worlds at once, though all may travel freely among them. If you can locate your father in one world, while the souls remain in another, well, it may be possible to obtain the location of the list quickly before you are detected and detained. Something she says makes me stand up straighter. But why only 7 worlds? I thought you said there are 8. The last world is reserved for the dead. Once one soul crosses into the final world, there is no returning to this one. I shudder at her words. Is it even possible, then, to meet my father in the other worlds, since he is dead and I am not? Sonia nods. Your father has not yet crossed. We would not have been able to speak to him if he had. Those who wait willingly in the other worlds do so for a reason. Your father must be waiting to help you. Once he crosses, you will not be able to speak to him again until you join him in the final world. But the other 7 worlds are in-between places. In-between places in which you can meet. She stops, looking at me kindly, as if wanting to ease my disappointment before the words are even spoken. But you are as yet untrained, Leah. I know, but this is our only hope. We must find the names of the 2 remaining keys. We cannot go any further without them, and the only way to find them is to first find the list. I ponder it a moment before making my decision. It is the only way. You said it is possible to control one's travel, didn't you? That one can fall willingly into the other worlds? You can help me get there, Sonia. You can help me find my father. You can tell me what to do. She doesn't want to agree. Her nod comes slowly and with effort. But you will be taking a grave risk. The souls are waiting. Samael himself is waiting. He is waiting for you, Leah. He will try to detain your soul in the other worlds. If he should succeed, he will take you to the void and you will be Samael's prisoner for eternity. Do you understand what that means, Leah? You will never be able to cross into the final world. Never. She shakes her head, coming to a decision. No, you must not travel alone. Not yet. I will go with you. But her words do not sway me. I have made my decision. I shake my head. No, I will go alone. A half hour later, I lie on the leather sofa in the darkened library, the drapes pulled against the afternoon light. Sonia kneels beside the sofa, her eyes earnest and worried. When I say, close your eyes, and empty your mind of everything but the place you wish to go, the face you wish to see. We will count together until I say stop. Try to hear your own breath, to feel the beat of your heart. I know it sounds, well, it must sound mad, but that's what you must do. Reduce yourself to the workings of your physical body while you empty your mind of all but that which you desire to see. She pauses before continuing. Be careful what you think about while traveling. Thoughts have power, Leah, especially in the other worlds. I store away this new rule for later use and feel a moment of panic as fresh questions arise. Wait a minute. Must I travel through the worlds in some sort of order while searching for Father? I remember the dead field where I met Alice. And what if I find myself in the wrong place? If I cannot find Father, or worse yet, if I arrive in a frightening place altogether? You may travel anywhere you like, though it will take some time to gain control over your destination. Because you are unpracticed, you must try to call your Father to you. He will feel your presence on the plane. This knowledge, this energy, will bring you together in the right world. He will find his way to you if he can. And if he doesn't, you are in the wrong world and must leave immediately for another before the souls detect your presence. What if the souls find me? Or Samael? How will I get away? Sonia chews her lip, thinking. You will have to set your feet on solid ground at the first possible moment. We are always vulnerable on the plane. It is not our natural place. But we are most vulnerable of all when flying. Those who live in the other worlds know its ways. They know how to navigate its terrain, how to locate the things they seek, and how to bring harm to those they view as intruders. If you become trapped by the souls or Samael or anyone else... I prop myself up on my elbows in protest. Anyone else? She places a warm hand on my arm. The other worlds are full of spirit beings. Some will seek to help you, others to make simple mischief, and still others to do real harm. Even experienced travelers must be wary on the plane. This new knowledge serves only to spur me forward, anxious to have the deed done so that I may return to the safety of Birchwood. All right, tell me how I can protect myself then. Sonia's brow wrinkles as she searches for words. All living things give off energy of some kind, and this includes those whose spirits dwell in the other worlds. When they seek to cause you harm, they do so by harnessing the energy they have. To protect yourself, you have to do the same. I nod, thinking of the souls that swirled above Alice and me in the dead field, the force of them, the power that made me weak-willed and complacent. How do I manage such a thing, to harness such energy? She taps her fingers nervously on the sofa. That is the part that's so difficult to explain. I've been doing it since I was small, so it isn't an easy thing to name. But think of the energy you harbor as a seed, a tiny seed lying at the very center of your being. The seed is small, invisible even, but within it is more force, more strength, more light than you can imagine. When you feel threatened, you have to see the seed unraveling, opening to reveal the living thing within. I don't want her to know that this seems very fantastical, that the idea of an invisible seed protecting me against the force of the souls seems far-fetched in the extreme, and that is putting it quite nicely. Instead, I nod, opening my mind to her words, reminding myself that I would not have believed any of it, the mark, the medallion, the prophecy, a few short weeks ago. And yet, it has all proven true. She continues as if she can hear my disbelief. You mustn't simply think it. You have to see it, all right? You have to envision the seed opening, allowing your energy to flow outward from it, creating a barrier that will allow you time to escape. Is that my only hope then? Escape? She nods. For now, you've not the strength or skill for anything else. Just finish the task at hand, Leah. Find your father. Ask him where he hid the list. And then come back without delay. 27. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Our voices make ghostly music in the emptiness behind my eyelids. They work together, mine, Luisa's, and Sonia's, creating a whispery backdrop to the darkness into which I will myself to fall. And then they fall silent, privy to some cue I cannot see. Leah, you will let this world go. Allow yourself to fall into the blackness toward the other worlds. Sonia's voice is deep and soft before it goes quiet, and I am left to the empty world of my mind. At first, it is difficult not to think. It is difficult not to wonder when Aunt Virginia will be home, whether the servants find it strange that I am behind closed doors with my friends, and whether I shall be able to find Father. But my mind covers this small area quickly, and soon I am left with nothing else to wonder, with nothing else to do but think of Father's face, hear my breath, at first shallow and then ever slower and deeper. I picture the soft and fragrant world of my sea flight, the endless sky stretched smooth above me. I smell the salty air of the sea and imagine Father's face. All at once, there is a flash, a blinding light that leaves me not in the darkness of sleep, but in blazing sunlight through which I cannot see. The sound of my heart beating is magnified, thudding insistently in the background, as flashes of memory come more and more rapidly. Birchwood, the faces of Sonia and Louisa, Alice and Henry, the river, James lying by its side. And then I am let loose of the constraints of my body with a great freeing tug, coming to consciousness flying over a wood I don't recognize. The ground below me is dense with trees, a thick green carpet that looks smooth and soft from the air. As I move through the sky, the smell of salt becomes stronger, the trees below me thinning until they are lost completely to a far-reaching meadow swaying with long, green grass. I hear the sea in the distance. It grows louder and louder, and soon I am over a beach of sweeping sand, an azure sea lapping at its shore. It is here that I will myself to touch the ground, remembering Sonia's instructions to avoid flight where possible. My feet sink into the sand. I feel the coarse roughness of it even through my boots, and marvel at the sensations that seem stronger each time I travel. I am not sure how to go about locating Father. According to Sonia, he will be looking for me, but even still it does not seem wise to stand so exposed on the beach, especially since I cannot yet be sure that I am in the right world. Spectral rock formations have created caves that make it impossible to see beyond the beach. I am relieved that I don't have to worry about protecting myself in an open space, but I avoid looking too closely at the darkness beyond the mouth of the caves. I focus on the path in front of me, picking my way along the stretch of sand and stepping around stray boulders as I go. Well, hello there. I almost jump out of my skin at the sound of the voice coming from the caves, alarmed that I have company in a place so deserted. A gentleman walks toward me, avoiding the many craggy rocks as he goes. He is young, dressed in trousers and a waistcoat. The formality of his dress is comical on the untamed stretch of beach. Hello. I take a quick look around, wondering if there are others nearby. The man comes closer, and I see that he is quite handsome. His hair is fair, like that of James, his face slightly tanned. He is not much older than myself, and the gleam in his eye is entirely friendly. I relax my guard just a little. The man bows before me in mock seriousness. Michael Ackerman, at your service, miss. I thought I should wander the beaches all day without company, but I guess I'm in luck. To what do I owe the pleasure of such lovely company? Well, Mr. Ackerman. Oh, you must call me Michael. Mr. Ackerman is my father. All right, then, Michael. I'm looking for someone, you see, but I'm not sure where he is, and I don't know my way around as of yet. He nods knowingly. I understand. You're here for your father, aren't you? I tip my head, surveying him with renewed interest. Why, yes. Yes, I am. How did you know? He waves into the salty wind. Oh, it is not difficult to know things here. You might say it's a small world, eh? He laughs at his joke. I suppose. Do you know where I might find my father, then? He nods with authority. Yes, yes, of course I do. He sent me to find you, as a matter of fact. He did? Yes, indeed. Told me to look for a lovely girl of about 16 and to bring her to him at once. He takes hold of my arm, propelling me forward down the beach. I pull my arm from his. Oh, wait one moment, please. I'm not sure I should be leaving with anyone. You see... Nonsense. He takes hold of my arm more firmly this time. I know just who you're looking for, and I shall take you right to him. But I only take a couple of steps before I see the strange shine in his eyes. It does not seem helpful anymore, but something more sinister, and I hear Sonia's voice across the worlds. Some will seek to help you, others to make simple mischief, and still others to do real harm. Now listen here. I move to pull my arm from his grasp. I do appreciate your help, truly, but I think I'll stay here a moment. Surely my father will find me, if only I stay in one place for a bit. His grip tightens, and I wince as his fingers dig painfully into the soft flesh of my upper arm. No, no, I don't think so. His voice has changed. It is harder now, and something less than friendly. We have another engagement, you see. One. But he does not have time to finish. All at once, a boy of perhaps Henry's age is standing in front of us, wearing a strange shirt without buttons and short breeches that reveal his scratched legs. His face is smudged with dirt. Time to shove off now, chap, the boy says. Now, now, little man. You'd do well not to concern yourself with matters beyond your years. Run along. Michael Ackerman pulls me a step farther before the boy steps in his path. I'm not going to tell you again. Let her go. I don't want to have to hurt you. It is strange to hear the threat come from so small a boy, but looking into his steely eyes, I feel quite sure he means it. Listen here. Michael Ackerman draws himself straighter and taller. I don't think you know who you're messing with. You understand what I'm saying? The girl is supposed to be detained. The boy shakes his head with resignation. I tried to tell you. He looks at me. Didn't I try to tell him? I suppose. My words are cut off when the boy raises his hand and says something in a language I don't recognize. At first the air around us falls strangely silent. Even the waves breaking against the shore seem to be soundless, as though the energy of the elements has been silenced by the boy's incantation. Then, all at once, the ground begins to shake. There is a moment, a split second, really, when we exchange hurried glances, the boys unexplainably satisfied, and Michael Ackerman's both knowing and afraid. I don't understand why his hand on my arm releases its grip until I look down and see the ground opening up beneath him. The sand parts seamlessly under his feet until he sinks, swallowed bit by terrified bit, into the ground. It all happens in an instant, and when I blink, Michael Ackerman is gone. The sand as smooth as if he were never there at all, the waves resuming their hypnotic rhythm. I turn to the boy. But what have you done with him? He sighs. Come on now, don't be upset. I gave him plenty of warning, and you saw how easy he went down. Besides, he was going to take you to the Lost Souls. His speech is strange and loose, without care for manners or proper grammar. I take a step back. I don't have time to question his bizarre display of magic, which, cruel as it may seem, has just saved me. My concerns are more personal and far more pressing. And how do I know you're any better? Perhaps you will take me to the souls as well. After all, you're here in the other worlds just as they are. Yeah, but I'm not one of them. I'm only here because I haven't crossed over yet. I narrow my eyes at him as if it will help me determine his honesty. And why is that? I don't know. But there are lots of spirits here like me. Sometimes we stay by choice, and sometimes we just stay. He shrugs. Anyway, you don't have to worry about me taking you to the souls. He leans in, lowering his voice, and looking around as if for eavesdroppers. Thomas, your father, has been looking after me, see? Protecting me from all kinds of weird things. This place? He looks skyward, affecting a low whistle. It's crazy. Anyway, Thomas asked me to look for you. Thomas and your mother. It is the boy's familiar use of my father's name, together with mention of my mother, that makes me believe him. You've seen my mother? Here? He nods. Of course. They're together. What did you expect? She's pretty, you know. He blushes. A bit like you in the eyes. I have to swallow the excitement that rises in my throat. Can you help me? Can you take me to them? He presses his lips together, looking skyward and then along the beach before leaning in, his voice low. I can't help you in so many words. The punishment for doing so would be... He shudders. Well, it would be bad, okay? But I can direct you a bit, and if someone should happen to notify your father that you're here, wandering the other worlds in search of him, well, who's to know if we keep it quiet? Listen, I would greatly appreciate your help. I don't have a lot of time, and it is imperative that I find, you know, his paranoia becomes my own, and I lower my voice and look around before continuing. How do you suggest I proceed? He leans in, lowering his voice to a whisper, and touching my arm with fingers I feel only as the whisper of a breeze. You have to think only of him. Don't even bother thinking of a place. You can't know where he is, not really. But he will try and find you, just not here. I still fear listening to this boy with his strange speech and stranger attire. Suppose it is a trick. Then again, suppose it isn't. Suppose he is trying to help. I have no choice, I decide. I shall have to trust that he means to help. Otherwise, I shall be a gray-haired old woman still standing on the beach in one world and lying on a leather sofa in another. So I shall have to travel to another world then? He nods. I'm afraid so. But trust me on this. If you just think of Thomas and nothing else, he'll find you. He's been trying to reach you for a long time. He turns as a breeze blows off the ocean, bringing a chill to the air that makes me cross my arms and look to the water. The wind dies all at once, the suddenness of it reminding me that I am not in my own world. When I look back, the boy is gone. I am once again alone on the deserted beach. I look around to be sure, but there can be no doubt. The boy has vanished, as if I never saw him at all. I hurry to a slab of rock near the lapping shore, arranging my skirts haphazardly about my legs. I am eager to find my father and get back to Birchwood, back to the world I know. Closing my eyes, I think of my father and begin counting, the numbers a prayer on the breeze off the water. 1, 2, 3, 4. I am off the ground, but not flying. Not exactly. Instead, I am caught in a black vortex pulled in every direction. This is not the swift and effortless journey from world to world, but a churning sea that makes me feel as if I cannot breathe. The panic that rises within me is instinctual. I wonder if the man on the beach has told the souls of my presence in the other worlds, if they will try to take me to the void. In an instant, my feet touch the ground. I did not realize my eyes were closed until I opened them to the world around me. It is almost colorless, ice reaching as far as the eye can see. The sky is white, stretching above and beyond, making it difficult to see where the ice beneath my feet ends and the bleached sky above begins. Instinct tells me to run, to leave this world as swiftly as possible, to try to find my father in another. But I decide to wait, to give Father the time to find me if he is, in fact, searching for me here. Though there is nowhere to go, I don't like the feeling of standing exposed on the ice. I shuffle forward until a low, echoing call catches my attention. I stop, listening. It is a voice, muffled and coming from a distance. Holding very still, I try to make out the words but cannot, so I make my way toward the sound. There are no landmarks by which to gauge my progress. But I know I am approaching someone, because the voice grows louder. It is the strangest sensation, to hear the voice grow nearer and nearer, though there is not a thing in sight. Not a building or tree or cave. Nothing. As I grow closer to the source of the voice, I feel certain it is calling out, as if in need of help. I walk faster, though it is awkward across the treacherous ground, and I am uncertain of the kind of help I could provide. The voice is very near now, and I stop, looking around for the source of it, before shuffling forward once again, feeling as I am playing the childhood game hot or cold. I know the boy on the beach would tell me to be silent and wait for father, but it is impossible to stand so near the moaning without inquiring after the person making the noise. Hello? Is someone there? Are you all right? I feel silly, shouting into the emptiness. The moaning stops, but only for a moment. It resumes soon enough, and now, at last, I make out some of the words. Help. Help me. Please. It sounds like a woman. I look around, trying to figure out where the person might be calling from. Hello? Where are you? Help. Me. The voice is at my elbow, almost on top of me. Please, save me. This time there can be no doubt. The voice is not at my elbow, but under my feet. I bring my gaze to the ice, slipping as I see the figure frozen beneath it. I stifle a scream, the sudden movement causing me to slip, arms and legs flailing as I fall. I scramble on hands and knees, slipping and sliding to get away from the person entombed in the ice directly under me, though there is no reason why I should be afraid of her. The face is colorless, but perfectly preserved within the ice. Even her hair is frozen, stretched out in the ice behind her. When she speaks, her lips move almost imperceptibly. Help me. They are coming. I am overcome with both terror and pity. I want to help, but truth be told, my desire to help wars with a powerful urge to flee, to run as far as possible from the gruesome image. My mind pages through the possibilities and comes to a quick conclusion. There is no time to help. If I am to find Father and locate the list, I must steer clear of the souls. It will not do to stay in one place for long, particularly a place as frightening and dangerous as this one. As I scramble to stand, the voice of the woman beneath me becomes the voices of many, all moaning, their voices stretching into the air around me, grasping and tugging, until I feel as if their icy hands pull me toward the ice. Help us. Lost. Die. Please. Release us. Child. The voices morph together, warped, insinuating themselves into my mind until I hold my hands over my ears as I stand, gasping for breath, immobilized by fear and horror. I remember my last thought as I left the beach, and I know I am in the void. I shake my head against the knowledge, but the truth cannot be denied. I was brought here, not by the souls, but by my own fear, my own thoughts when traveling. Thoughts have power, Leah, especially in the other worlds. The memory of Sonia's voice shakes me from my stupor. I close my eyes and picture my father. In my mind, I make room for nothing else. Father. 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 I am lifted, the frozen landscape below becoming distant. As I rise, I see the faces, so many faces trapped under the ice, stretched as far as the eye can see. A multitude of souls, banished and frozen for all eternity. And then I am back in the vortex, back into darkness. When I open my eyes, I am floating just over the grass, moist with dew. I know I am near Birchwood in the parallel plane of the other worlds, though there is nothing but fields and trees in every direction. It is evening, and when I look to the sky, I see that it is not the gray sky under which Alice made her threats, but the deep and darkening violet of my first invigorating travel over the sea. I recognize the large oak that shades the clearing by the river. Father often brought me here when I was a child, reading to me in summer under the shade of the leafy giant. I lower my feet to the downy grass. I am not afraid. Walking to the tree, I have the greatest sense of expectation, as if I am waiting for something wonderful that I cannot quite name. When they emerge from the forest, I understand why. Father appears younger than I remember, though Mother looks just as I have imagined, a young wife and mother. Her laugh travels to me on the breeze as they approach hand in hand. She looks up at Father with adoration. I feel an intruder, as if this moment is theirs alone, but it lasts only a second. When they see me, their faces light with smiles. In an instant, they are standing before me. I throw myself into Father's arms. Father, is it you? My voice is muffled in the shoulder of his overcoat. His big laugh surrounds us, reverberating through his chest. Of course it's me, love. who else would be walking arm in arm with your lovely mother? The mention of my mother is a reminder that Father and I are not, after all, alone. Mother, I cannot believe it. I cannot believe it's you. She smiles, tipping her head in a gesture that reminds me of Aunt Virginia and a little of Alice. I had to come. It seems you need us now more than ever. Worry colors her eyes. I nod. I have come to know the prophecy and my place in it as well. I must find the list of names, but I don't know where Father has hidden it. I turn my face to him. Was it you? When we spoke through Sonia, through the spirit talker. I remember the word used while Sonia was in the spirit trance. He hesitates before nodding. I tried to tell you about the list, but I couldn't hear you clearly. And then he came. The words bring a chill to my blood, though the wind is as soft as ever. Yes. I was forced to leave or risk being held and taken to the void. I would be there now if not for your mother's power. She intervened when the souls tried to banish me there. We have been running from them ever since. He turns to look down at her, putting an arm around her shoulders and pulling her close in a gesture of deep affection that brings a lump to my throat. He turns back to me. I knew you needed me. That is why I haven't crossed. Why neither of us has crossed. He looks around, lowering his voice. Word has gone out across the worlds, Leah. Word that you are to be stopped if anyone sees you. Samael is feared above all else, and his army ensures that the weaker spirits among us do his bidding. They have spies in every corner. We have allies, those who will help us if they can, but it will not be possible to hold the souls at bay for long. It is not safe for you here, or for us. I take a deep breath. Then we must move quickly. Tell me where the list is, Father, so that I can find the remaining keys. He leans forward, his lips near my ear, and whispers, I left it in care of the one I love, in my chamber. I try to decode his words as I remember our search through his room, but I have... He holds a hand up then, as if to stop me from speaking further. Placing a finger to his lips, he looks around us. I understand his meaning. We may be spied upon, even now. I shake my head, trying to tell him that the list is not there, that I have looked and looked, but the list still eludes me. But he nods firmly, as if to say, Yes, it is there. You must look again. I repeat his words in my mind. I left it in care of the one I love, in my chamber. The image comes to me suddenly, as easily as if it were there all along. I look into his eyes and nod, feeling a welcome burst of hope. He looks up as the sky darkens, casting shadows about us where before there were none. We must go, Leah. Our time is nearing its end. My chest tightens at the thought of their leaving. Against my wishes, I have grown accustomed to the responsibility of my role in the prophecy. I have grown accustomed to going without Father's comforting embrace, his steady hand. But seeing my parents again, if only for a moment, has reminded me of all I have lost. I don't want to go. I want to stay with you. I am not ashamed to sound like a piteous child. My mother steps forward, pulling me into an embrace. Leah. She breathes into my hair, and I smell the jasmine on her neck. I'm sorry I've brought this upon you, but you are the angel, the one sister who can end the prophecy forever. And it is meant to be so, however much we wish it were not. It was always meant to be you. There are no mistakes, Leah. Not ever. For ages and ages, the sisters have been waiting only for you. I want to deny her words, even now after all I have seen, but there is truth in them. And so I nod, staring into the eyes that are so like the ones I see every morning when I look into the glass above the basin in my room. I nod to tell her that I understand, that I accept my duty in the prophecy, the duty that she passed on to me, that I am not afraid. Father looks up into the sky. It is still blue, but the cold wind has returned, and with it, the vaguest sense of danger. He looks at me with apology. We must go. I lift my chin. Yes. I nod, already sensing the futility of trying to keep them with me. Even now, they are less vivid, less present than they were only a few moments earlier. My mother gives me a last embrace. I knew it was you, even in the beginning, but I saw something in your eyes, something that gave me hope. I'm only sorry I was not strong enough to fight it for you. I shake my head. Remember, Mother, there are no mistakes. She smiles through her tears, leaning in to kiss my cheek. No mistakes, my angel. They turn to go, more quickly than I would like. Mother turns back once more, her face clouding over with worry. Watch out for Henry, Leah, will you? She does not wait for my answer, but I nod anyway, shouting after them, I love you. I love you both. It is all I have time to say, and then they are gone. Emotion courses through me as I travel in the direction of Birchwood. There is great sorrow at the parting of my mother and father, but great happiness as well. It fills me so totally that I feel as if their love pushes me through the sky. I marvel at the control I have gained in the other worlds in so short a time, the new assurance I feel in the direction and speed with which I fly. But that is before a distant crack sounds from the sky behind me. It begins as a vibration, and I feel sure the ground shakes, though I am not touching it at all. With it comes a low rumbling from the earth, as if it might break open from the sheer force of the thing that thunders toward me. A looming mass lies ahead. I feel quite sure it is Birchwood, but when I look behind me, I see the souls roaring toward me in a great black horde. From a distance, they seem a buzzing cloud of insects, but I know they will be here all too soon and will be anything but easy to swat away. The call of Birchwood, of familiarity and safety, is powerful, but I do not trust myself to outrun the souls. I stop flying, having made the only decision that offers any hope of escape, and imagine myself hovering over the ground until I am doing just that. And then I wait, watching the cloud get bigger, darker, louder, as it makes its way toward me. I shall have to face them here, in the skies of their own world. I would like to say that I am not frightened, that I stand brave and firm in the face of the souls. But it would be a falsity, for who could stand without fear before the roaring legion making its way toward me? No, I am more than frightened. I am terrified to the point of shaking even in my astral being. But I stand fast, forcing myself steady. My plan is not clever, but it is all I have. And so I wait until the exact moment when the souls will be near enough that I may call on the power of Sonya's instructions. I must time it carefully, early enough to stop the soul's advance, but not so soon as to waste what little time I may have to escape. I think of Sonya's voice in my head, counting. 1, 2, 3, not just yet. 4, 5, 6. They are close now, close enough that I can see their tortured, angry faces, their long beards vanishing over black waistcoats, torn and falling from their hulking bodies. 7, 8. The howl that emanates from the mass is inhuman. A battle cry belonging to a savage animal. As they come nearer, they spread out, over and above me, to either side, even under my hovering body, until I despair that I have waited too long, until I am sure they will devour my soul completely. There is nothing to do but close my eyes and imagine the seed, tiny and closed in the deepest, most secret part of my body. I see the layers peeling back, revealing ever more layers, lighter and lighter in color, until I reach the lush, living entity at its center. It breathes. It throbs. It pulses with life. I still hear the souls, but their shrieks are part of another place entirely, for I have retreated into a hushed and muffled world of my own. The only sound I hear clearly is the beating of a heart. At first I think it comes from my own chest, but then I open my eyes and see the red light pulsing at the center of the mass, the thunderous wings beating the air with an ominous whoosh from within the shadowed form of the souls. From Samael at their center, a red glow emanates outward, his heart beating in time to my own, his many great wings spreading up and out over his army. I must force my mind back to the seed, to the thing at its center. I see it opening, unfolding, bursting, filling up every crevice of my body. When I look down, a lavender light spills from my skin, my eyes, my mouth, intensifying with every passing moment as a power I have never before felt or imagined undulates from my body, flowing outward in small ripples that grow to echoing waves. If the souls make any sound at all, it is lost in the music of my own power and the still-beating heart that throbs between Samael and me. I think this may be the moment, my only moment to flee to the safety of Birchwood while the souls are held at bay with whatever authority I have managed to tap. But then I hear the voice. Mistress, let chaos reign. Open the gate. I shake my head by instinct, afraid to utter words that may shake whatever foothold I have gained with my small show of force. Power and peace will be yours. Open your arms, angel of chaos, and let the havoc of the beast flow like a river. Open the gate. The voice slithers to me through the souls, through the silky sky. It makes its way through the lilac light, as the souls themselves cannot. It is only a voice. They are only words. But they call to me in a way that is both a warning and a caress. The light still flows from my body, but my strength wavers as the words of Samael find their way past my ears, past my mind, even deeper into some ancient place that has been waiting, only waiting for their call. In the voice is the promise of release. Release from the fight that seems never ending, though it has only been mine a short time. Release from a future continuing that fight, from a future that will not hold the things I most desire. Security, love, hope. But the seed unfolds ever more, past the point at which I think it can further grow, until it feels as if the power of it will split me apart, body and soul. And with that last burst of strength, I find the resolve I need. I do not take the time to look back. Instead, I turn within the light and call to the mystical power that is mine. I call on it to hurry me home with as much speed as is possible. I call on it to see me back to Birchwood, to hold Samael and his army at bay long enough for me to fall back into the body awaiting me on the sofa in the library. I race on the swell of light toward the looming thing in the distance. It does not take me long to confirm that the building ahead is indeed Birchwood. There was a reason, after all, that Father wanted to meet me in the world closest to home. He knew they would come. A great roar erupts in a mad screech behind me. I do not turn and look, though the urge to do so is powerful. I only fly, the fields racing below me as I near the house. It is only when I am close to home that I begin to lose strength. It does not happen all at once. Rather, it is a slow exhaustion that seeps into my bones, weakening the light that flows from my body. I am so near, near enough to make out the diamond panes in the leaded windows, near enough even to see the glow of the lanterns as dusk fast approaches. But a resounding clamor resumes behind me, and when I turn, I know why I have fallen just short of the time needed to make a complete escape. Samael has come for me. He has risen to the front of the souls, the still-beating heart growing louder as he makes his way to me. The strength of the souls is nothing compared to that of Samael. His power, his fury, is primordial. It rises in a swell of evil that steals my ability to move. I am hovering at the library window, my will leaking from me like rain, when I remember something Virginia said. Was it just this morning? If you call on them when the time comes, there are those who will help you. My body is too weak to continue, but my mind has just enough fight remaining to call for the help I need. Sisters, those of sisterhood past. My voice does not sound like my own. It is tinny and far away, but I continue anyway, closing my eyes and trying to block from mind some male drawing closer, closer. I call on you, sisters, to help one of your own, to save me, that I may save us all. I cannot even feel the ridiculousness of asking for such help in the face of the thing roaring toward me. As the moments tick on, are they seconds, minutes, hours? I resolve to close my eyes, to wait with dignity for whatever will come. But then I feel a fierce, warm wind, followed by a crack that makes me look to the heavens. When the woman comes into view, Samael and his souls seem to slow their progress. She stands a few feet away, somewhere between me and the swiftly approaching army. There is something familiar about the stubborn set of her jaw, the green pools of her eyes. The nameless woman stands between me and the souls as other women appear from the sky as if out of nowhere, fanning out and forming a circle around the souls and Samael. Ethereal gowns billow around their translucent legs as they raise their hands until they are almost touching. White-hot flames spark and burst from their palms, forming a circle of mystic fire between the beast and me. The first woman hovers nearest me, the weak lavender light that poured from my body, a brilliant purple pouring from hers, extending, rushing outward until it echoes through the circle in which the soul's steeds rear on panicked legs. Her mouth does not move as her voice comes to me from a distance. It resonates in my mind, and I realize she is not speaking aloud at all. Go, child. Gather your strength. We shall meet again. Samael howls, raising a sword through the center of the circle. It glows orange, sparks hissing off its blade, crackling against the light of the sisters' circle, and though they are clearly powerful, I have no wish to test their strength against Samael's for an extended length of time. I nod to the woman in acknowledgement of her words, pushing through the walls of the house in what feels like my last moment of strength. Sonia and Luisa sit on the floor near the sofa, Sonia holding my limp hand with her eyes closed, her mouth moving in silent prayer. I drop into my waiting body with a gasp felt in both worlds, sucking in air as if I have been deprived of breath for a great while and have only just been revived. She's back! She's come back! Luisa's voice bursts from the floor next to me. I only vaguely feel Sonia's smooth touch on my hand, as if all of my senses have not fully re-engaged with my body. I try to speak, to tell them that we must go back to Father's room to look for the list, but what comes from my mouth is a series of noises and sounds that do not resemble real words. I shake my head in frustration as Sonia speaks harshly. Leah? Leah? Look at me, Leah. Listen to me. She takes her hand from mine, turning my chin so that I am forced to face her, looking into my eyes with such authority that I am forced to look back. In them is the peaceful sea of the other worlds. You must be calm. It is natural. It is natural to be unable to speak when returning from such a journey, all right? I can only stare, not trusting myself to speak again. All right, Leah? You must trust me. Your speech will come back in seconds. The feeling in your body will come back in seconds. You must slow your breath and wait. You must allow your mind to process all you have done, all you have seen. You must allow it a few moments to return to its physical state. Look at me, Leah, and nod that you understand. Her voice is harsh. I feel suddenly like a child, but there is safety in the firm command of her words, and I look her in the eyes and try to nod. Good. Now stay still. Just stay still and breathe. I give myself over to the utter helplessness of my body. When I look at Luisa, the fear in her eyes frightens me further, so I force myself to turn back to Sonia, to look into the blue depths of her eyes until I am breathing more normally. I test my fingers, commanding them to move, and am grateful when they do as ordered. I follow the same procedure with the rest of my body, making small demands of it until it seems all is in working order. Only then do I try to speak. Sonia and Luisa are held in rapt attention as I try to form the words. His chamber. The list is in his chamber. Behind the picture of my mother. 29. Are you certain that is where it is? Luisa hands me the photo of my mother after retrieving it from father's room. I have been forced to stay on the sofa, as Sonia has informed me that weak limbs are one of the unfortunate side effects of an especially long and difficult journey on the plane. As if that is not enough, my head is pounding, giving me new sympathy for the trials of Sonia's life as a spiritualist. Though it has not been said aloud, the darkness beyond the window panes tells us that our time alone runs short. Aunt Virginia will return with Alice and Henry at any moment. Not entirely, but as certain as I can be under the circumstances. I stare at the image of my mother. Her eyes are no less intense for the black and white photo, and I remember their vibrancy during our brief visit on the plane. "Would you like me to do it?" Sonia asks softly. I shake my head. "No, I'll do it." I turn the photo over in my hand, laying it face down on my lap. The thin metal clips at the back slide easily out of the way, allowing me to lift the thin piece of wood from the frame. At first, I think there is nothing there. I can see the back of the photo and am preparing to lift it, too, from the frame when something catches my eye in the corner of the frame between the glass and the ornate metal. As I lift the frame closer to my face, Luisa breaks in. "What is it? Is there something there?" I'm not sure, but it does not take long to realize that there is indeed something there. I pluck it from the corner of the frame with shaking fingers, though whether they tremble from excitement, fear, or my recent visit to the plane, I cannot say. "But it's so small," Sonia says. "Surely that cannot be the list." It is just a scrap, a minute piece of paper that has clearly been torn from the corner of a larger page, but I am not as disappointed as I might have imagined. It is the closest we've come yet to the list. Although it is no longer hidden in the frame where my father left it, of one thing I am certain. It once was. Sonia and Luisa are as quiet as I. The disappointment is audible in the silence of our breathing, the lack of words spoken between us. It is I who finally speaks, who finally breaks with one word, the heavy quiet in the library. Alice. I pace the floor in my bedroom, trying to gather my thoughts before confronting Alice. I could not do so amid the flurry of activity as Aunt Virginia and Henry shared their purchases and recounted the tales of their day. I had time only to meet Alice's gaze in a searing glance before she retired to her room. Dinner followed, a tense though grand affair with guests still in the house, though Thanksgiving proper has passed. Luisa and Sonia offered to accompany me when I confront my sister. But this part of the prophecy, this part of the battle, is mine. I have waited through the evening with growing fury. Alice, working in concert with the souls who would see me dead. Alice exposing me to harm by undoing Mother's spell. Alice taking the list. By the time the house settles into sleep, I am more than prepared to retrieve the list from Alice, and I leave my chambers with a purposeful step that is not as silent as it should be given the hour. I knock when I reach her door, but open it before she can answer. She will not have the choice to deny me entry. On her face is a look of true surprise that I have never seen before. Her hand flies to her bosom, her mouth forming an O of bewilderment. "Leah, whatever..." I march toward her, and for the first time in all the years we have been sisters, in all the years we have been friends and confidants, my sister looks afraid of me. She takes a step back as I come within a foot of her face. "Give it to me, Alice." I hold out my hand, wanting her to understand that I will not leave without the list of names that is my passage to freedom. She shakes her head, making a good show of false confusion. I don't know what you mean. I narrow my eyes. "Yes, you do, Alice. You have it. You stole it from Father's room." She pulls herself up straighter, eyes blazing, the look of fear receding behind her own indignation. "I tell you, Leah, whatever it is you think I have, I don't. though from the look of things, it must be very important to you. I quite wish I had it now, whatever it may be. Her eyes take on a wicked shine that always makes me fear what she will do or say next. When she continues, I understand why, especially since you have something of mine. We stare at each other for a moment, our breath shallow and audible in the quiet room. I do not intend to confirm my possession of the knife, nor do I intend to return it to her. Instead, I force a calm into my voice that I do not feel. Give it back, Alice. She tips her head, meeting my eyes without flinching. I still don't know what you mean. Frustration threatens to boil over. She knows to what I refer. I am sure of it. But I have no choice but to spell it out further, unless I should like to stand in Alice's room playing word games all night. The list. Father's list of names. It was on his night table behind the photo of Mother, and now it's gone. She turns, wandering casually back toward her dresser, pulling pins from her hair as she looks at me in the mirror over her bureau. Ah, now I see. You have finally become wise enough to realize the importance of the keys. She turns around then, clapping her hands together in applause, as if she is at the theater. The sound erupts into the quiet room. Well, good for you, Leah. You must be so proud. Nevertheless, I don't have the list. Oh, I wanted it. I even went into Father's chamber to retrieve it. I looked behind the picture of Mother, but the list was not there even then. I cannot hide the confusion I feel spreading across my face. But how did you know? How did you know where it was when I've been looking all this time? She laughs aloud, and there is genuine amusement in it. Oh, Leah, you still don't understand, do you? She spins to face me once again, her long hair spilling onto her shoulders in a riot of curls. I don't need Father to tell me things. I never have. I learned early on that I was of no interest to him, not when he had his precious Leah. No, I didn't need him in this world, and I don't need him now that he is in the next. I don't need Virginia, and I don't need you. I have my own ways of finding things. I'm only sorry I didn't find the list in time. What do you mean? You found it too late? She sighs as if having to explain something very simple to a small child. The frame was empty save for our dear mother's picture. Sarcasm drips from her words. I knew it was there at one time, so I assumed you'd simply found it and had it hidden elsewhere. Facing her, I cannot think of a single thing to say. My anger has been replaced with a deep and unsettling confusion. If I don't have the list, if Alice truly doesn't have it, who else would have use for such a dark and dangerous thing? The angel, guarded only by the gossamer veil of protection, fragile and worldly, easily torn. I open my eyes to the words, whispered in some lost recess of consciousness. I have slept fitfully, full of dreams that I sense are, for once, only that. Dreams. When I wake, it is not with the answer I need, but with the familiar words echoing in my mind. The angel, guarded only by the gossamer veil of protection. Guarded only by the gossamer veil of protection. Guarded only by veil of protection. Of protection. Of protection. The words repeat as if there is a scratch on one of Father's gramophone discs. As if someone is trying to tell me something. And then there are Father's broken words, spoken across the worlds. Henry is all that is left of the veil. And all at once, I know what it means. I descend the stairs at a dead run. I don't give a thought to the commotion I make as I reach the bottom, but it must be considerable because Luisa and Sonia emerge in a fright from the dining room. Sonia holds a napkin in her hand, looking at me with surprise. Leah, whatever is the... Aunt Virginia? My voice is a bellow through the house, desperation seeping deeper and deeper into my bones. Luisa and Sonia stare with wide-eyed shock at my behavior. The click of shoes on marble makes me turn. Relief fills my